Jeff here. We'll get back to the podcast in a second, but I wanted to let you know of an opportunity to help you further develop your church online. Here at The Church Digital, we've found some of the best ways for churches to grow their ministry online is to work alongside other churches. To that end, The Church Digital is opening up some coaching cohorts in January 2020. Through our cohorts, you'll be connected with churches with similar goals in place in ministry and work through these goals together over the 6 months under the guidance of the crew here at The Church Digital. In 2020, invest in your church online. Invest in you. For more information and to find out how you can save 20%, visit thechurch.digital/cohort. Episode 39 of the Church Digital Podcast. And I got to tell you, I am really excited about where this podcast is going to end. Check it out. Recently, two organizations got together and created a survey to check the state of church online. So we talk about whether churches are engaging or not and what's happening. And so they did a survey to see where you, churches out there, and how you are engaging and utilizing this church online method. So we got Living as One. Now, they are no stranger to the podcast or to the Church Digital. We do a ton of work with Colin Jones and Paul and those guys over at Living as One. And also, we're bringing in new to the podcast, Leadership Network. Now, hopefully you guys are no strangers to Leadership Network. By the way, they create some phenomenal resources out there and do a number of intensive trainings and things to help the church, you, the church, operate better. They came together to create a survey, and now we've got the results in of how you, church out there, and your contemporaries, how you're utilizing church online. So this is cool. The survey is out. It's public. It's been released. The report has. And so you can download that report. We're going to put the link in the show notes. You can just swing over there and grab it from there. But more than that, with this podcast, we're able to sit down with these guys and have a conversation about where we are. Okay, so we're seeing this stat. Why? We're seeing this trend. Why? Where are we going? What's next? More than just looking at where we are today, let's be proactively figuring out where we're heading for tomorrow and start to move down that road as we continue this growth towards church online, towards discipleship online. I got to tell you, the thing that I was most excited about with this report is this idea that discipleship is not just a word that's said in closed doors, but it's something that's happening virtually. And we're starting to see more and more churches trend that way and understand that. The report shows it, which makes me so excited because this is the stuff that we've been talking about. It's awesome. So here's where we are with the podcast. We literally got Colin Jones, president of Living as One. We got Greg Ligon, the chief innovation officer with Leadership Network. Ray DeArmas, co-host once again, online pastor with Christ Fellowship Miami. And myself, Jeff with The Church Digital, in a conversation detailing behind the screens. Hey, everybody. Here you go. I was just curious, like, what were the overall trends that you found in your research? Was there anything that, like, what's the theme that was maybe discovered through this research?
Well, I think one of the big ideas and one of the things that was demonstrated to me that there's a significant growth in this space is that those that were surveyed for this project, 47% reported that they had an online campus. Which is up 28% from when we asked the same question 5 years ago. In fact, when we asked that question 5 years ago, 62% indicated they plan not to have an online campus. So we're seeing really rapid growth in the development of online campuses.
What do you think is the relationship? What's causing that shift to go from not wanting to do a campus to now? What's been the cultural thing that do you think has allowed more churches to get excited about online?
Well, I think, you know, in some ways it just represents the growth of social environments online anyway. So I think that's, it kind of follows that trend a bit. I think the other thing is in 5 years, of course, technology changes, feels like about every 10 minutes. In fact, that's one of the things I'll talk about a little bit later, but because the technology has improved so much, over the last 5 years, I think more and more people are able to get into the game more quickly because it's affordable and easier to use and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I've been surprised by how quick the perspective shifted from, oh, church online is going to hurt my attendance, people won't come, you know, all those different perspectives. And then now surveying that on the data, that was really surprising to me, you know, 46% disagreed, that online attendance, you know, doesn't get hurt by it, you know, online streaming, in-person attendance, and then 20% agreed that it hurt attendance. So there was, the, you know, more than double that disagreed with that, and then the rest, I guess, were neutral. Really surprising. Yeah,
that was a big surprise to me as well. And, you know, I consistently get calls from senior pastors who have that question. They're like, oh my gosh, you know, we started an online campus and we've dropped our attendance, you know, X percentage. We're thinking about shutting down our online campus. And so I was surprised at the growth in the people, growth in the number of people who really felt like that was hurting their physical presence. The growth in the people that didn't feel like it was hurting their physical presence. I think you mentioned the 46% disagreed that adding an online campus hurt their physical presence. So I think that was very interesting to me as well. I think one of the things that oftentimes senior pastors, that it's an issue in terms of the impact on physical attendance as well, really in some ways has nothing to do with online. There's a significant decrease in physical attendance simply because of the fact that people will see themselves as being a regular attender at church, but they may only come one time a month or two times a month. And so when you actually begin to look at the actual people, the mm-hmm. bodies that are showing up on your physical campus, your growth is actually, in many cases, you're growing. You're not declining in terms of the number of people that you're serving. We work with a group in Scott Thumma at Hartford Research Institute. And I believe the latest number that they quote is if you take your average weekend worship attendance, you can multiply it by 3.2. And that really gets you to be at what the reach is that you have as a church.
Just to understand, are churches also taking into consideration how this is affecting their decision-making, considering how many people are engaging with them online? Do you guys see any shifts in terms of how churches are considering both how they're addressing people, like how they're preaching to them, but also how they're making decisions in regards to everything from budgets to how they're communicating with them in terms of engagement?
Well, probably the thing that jumps out to me when you ask that question is Crossroads Church, which is up in Cincinnati, which I think is one of the churches that's really leading the way, not just with online, but with digital, all kinds of digital things. But on their online campuses, you know, they are really working toward having an experience that is that is shaped by the physical campus that you're going to be most likely to attend. So, for mm-hmm. example, if I log on online and my locator indicates that I'm closest to the campus that's in the south side of Cincinnati, then they're moving toward the place where they'll actually have the stream will actually be, will include the campus pastor from that physical campus. And they're really committed to that. In fact, they've even changed the name of their for their campus pastors to community pastors, because they're charging them with the responsibility, not just for the people that are showing up at their building, but those who are showing up online in that, from that specific geographic area. So that's one of the ways I see that happening.
Yeah, I think Matt had a really cool quote from that on the report where he said, you know, it was asking the question basically of, you know, from the data in the report, it's the question of what's the purpose of, you know, live streaming online. And then I think, like, you know, the majority right now is just getting people, you know, like still just keeping people connected. Like, but then if you look at like the higher echelon of churches, like if you go to like 10,000 plus, their highest reason is for outreach and evangelism and just like not engagement at all, for actually reaching people. And so I think we'll start to see more and more of the smaller churches realize that, like, hey, this is, you know, the offline attender, as long as he's still engaging, should count as a church member. And people are kind of battling with that question now. I think churches like Crossroads, you know, say stuff like, you know, we don't want to convert someone from online to on-site. You know, our goal is to make sure they're connected to the church community. And connecting is more important than converting them from online to offline for us. And so they're saying, you know, they have other ways of them to connect digitally, digital community groups, and that's more important to them than actually becoming into a button seat, which is like a huge shift that we see. And I think, you know, Jeff's talked about that a ton on his podcast, is that trying to get pastors and people to think through, hey, don't just think button seats and the old paradigm. And we're really seeing that shift with the churches that are doing digital well. Hey, this digital attender, if he's growing in community with others, attending a church body in whatever way, then that should count just as much as a regular person that's in the seat, maybe even more so than someone who just comes and watches it every weekend and then leaves and is not involved at all after that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to be talking with Crossroads here in a couple episodes, so we're excited to roll that out for everybody. They're doing a lot of really interesting things in that digital and in that church online scope. One of the things that surprised me with the stats you guys rolled out is that you capped the lowest size church at about 800 people. The average church in America is probably closer to 72, 73, I think. 80% of churches in America are under 200 in size. I'm not sure on the stats, but these are things that I've heard and they sound reasonable. Why did you cap at 800? Like, what was the logic at that size versus maybe even digging into some of the smaller size churches?
Well, it's really primarily based off of a leadership network bias. We've always worked with larger churches. And so our base of churches that participated are primarily larger churches. And so that's really what drove that more so than any intention not to reach into the small group market. That's just really been who we feel like we've been called to serve. So that's that'd be the foundation for that. I think part of the reason that smaller churches may or may not be involved, I think it's really primarily, in some ways, it's similar to, this is not, I'm going to make a blanket statement here that I don't mean to be a blanket statement, because there's some actually very incredibly healthy small churches. But in many cases, there's some small churches that they're small because there's a lack of vision and leadership. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, that translates then into not being willing to take risk, not being willing to, even in many cases, not even being exposed to some of the new things that are happening in the church.
Yeah, they don't have time to get their heads above the water. We talked to like quite a few churches in the, you know, hey, we got 50 people attending and we want to stream because, you know, there's a lot of transient communities and people, especially in Florida, we hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we lose half our people in the winter. Or, I mean, we, you know, grow, it's the opposite of way around. Part in the winter. And then in a lot of communities like that, and the smaller churches primarily are driven by reasons like that. Like, they're not thinking about it like, well, I want to reach a bunch of people online. But then occasionally now, like, especially in the digital world, you'll get really small churches that have just some visionary digitally, and they'll be doing crazy numbers digitally and have like 200 people coming on, you know, in their service every Sunday, or even just online churches only. And like, because the barrier to entry for a digital church and the amount of people that you can reach without it being weird is so many more people than the old paradigm of having people having to attend and do that. So that model is starting to be challenged. And I think that's really interesting, especially, you know, you guys have talked about it as a way of church planning even. And what's cool is like, we really love when we talk to those smaller churches because they just have questions about it all. You know, like, how do we do cameras? How do we do, et cetera? And those are really fun for us. Mm-hmm. You're guiding the whole thing. And oftentimes they're the scrappy ones that are, sometimes now you'll come up and you'll get like a really, you know, active, understand digital church planner that, you know, has some really interesting visions and views on digital. Yeah,
I think that the barrier, you know, just as you said, Colin, the barrier to entry is going down. And so I think you will see smaller churches. When I say a smaller church, I'm thinking more of a traditional smaller church that's been small for a long time. That mm-hmm. last little piece that you talked about was really around church planters. Yeah. And I think we are seeing this, and we're going to see a growing number of planters that are launching with an online, in some cases, maybe launching online first before they actually plant the physical campus, and building an online community that then becomes the core for launching their physical campus.
Yeah, we have quite a few that buy gear for that now. And it was crazy because there was one of them had, you know, 500 people at launch because they've been streaming for 6 months or whatever, which is pretty interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
I would love to see more church plants take advantage of that. And I've always wondered why there's this rush to get to the physical building, to pay the lease, to pay the AV cost, to go with all this, when starting in a virtual and then building from there, building that core team, getting your DNA out there in the community, That's a lot safer to do on a plant side. And I think looking forward, my hope is that more churches are going to start to plant that digital first, grow physical, sure, but start in a digital realm where people can connect to you and can engage with you before getting to that place where you have to start paying all the larger fees. Well, one of the things that I loved about the report is you delved in a lot to the discipleship piece of this. And a lot of times when we talk with churches and pastors, at least me, the extent of Church Online stops with the broadcast. Like the win of Church Online is just broadcasting the services out. And obviously Colin with Living as One, you guys do an excellent job with that. But I really respected how you guys asked some more questions to get into more of the discipleship angle of how churches are doing more than just broadcasting the services, but actually getting into small groups and into next steps and into this discipleship piece. You know, I saw one of the stats was it looked like about on average 3 to 6% of churches that were interviewed are doing some sort of discipleship virtually, online small groups, et cetera. I mean, obviously, when we looked at it, I think 10,000 plus people, those churches were more at like 20%. So there's this broad range where some of them are, very few are, but then when you get to like the giga level, a lot more pick up. What do you think is causing? What are the giga churches seeing that the others aren't? What are those hurdles that's stopping some of the other churches from doing more discipleship?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think part of the reason the giga churches are doing it more is because they have more dedicated resources to be able to try to figure it out, you know? And so they have, you know, they can put some staff who are given primary focus to really, you know, developing some of those kinds of things. So that's part of the reason. I think the other reason that it is, it's not accelerated as rapidly as we might think has less to do with online and more to do with a paradigm shift that is not yet fully engaged in terms of what it means to do discipleship. I think we're seeing many churches, even many large churches, are still, you know, thinking about discipleship in a very linear, curricular, educational kind of model. And discipleship really at its heart is really about transformation, right? And so I think as people begin to get more and more comfortable with the transformational side of discipleship, they're going to get more and more comfortable with the opportunities that online provides in terms of being able to actually have community online. Sure, an educational model is actually pretty easy to deliver online. There's a lot, I mean, if you've got a curriculum-based discipleship program, you can deliver that online pretty easily. But I think the ability to really see the online space as a place to really truly engage, not just to consume, I think we're still in the midst of that shift.
Why do you guys think that it is that so many churches are shy to take their services to social platforms? Because I saw a significant decrease between the number of churches that broadcast on their site compared to how many of them actually take it to the masses on social media.
Yeah, we're actually seeing like a huge increase in people streaming to social. It used to be where they didn't at all. It's pretty difficult to stream to social because you have all these music right things. And especially if you're a small church, like you get docked and taken down, so they get frustrated. But now like the social platforms are handling that a lot better, which is great news. And there's a lot more people that we're seeing. Like we had like last weekend, just for the amount of new churches that came on, for example, of all of our platform, we had like a 15% week over week increase in Facebook streaming, which is huge when you have that many churches on a platform. So it's like, that's not the new churches coming on. That's like, you know, like people that are already coming on that started streaming to Facebook that weren't before, which is really interesting. And however, like at the same time, they're realizing, you know, if you look at Facebook watch times, it's like, you know, you'll have, for example, Saddleback's numbers, you know, I forget the exact amount, but it's something like 20,000 views and like average watch time of less than 2 minutes. And that's every church that we talk to, you know, and then you get like watch times in the, you know, like on the embed code on Church Online platform or on your website, it's like 45 minutes, right? And so I think a lot of that is like people realizing that, you know, Facebook and YouTube and all that are really great for marketing value, but that it's really difficult to develop community just because of all the distractions there. And so, you know, there's like the ways that people are doing it that are working is like Facebook groups, but then inherently you lose the marketing value of that, you know, so you gain the community, but then lose the growth. So I think people are trying to answer all those questions. And that's why I think we'll start to see way more people start to build, you know, social features that on platforms that they control. Like Crossroads did with Crossroads Anywhere, and Church Home did with their app, and lots of churches using actually like social platforms, but that they completely control just for that reason, so that they can measure, track, grow community, discipleship. Like, there's tons of discipleship tools in those and ways of connecting people that you wouldn't, that would, you know, happen kind of naturally on Facebook, but are hard to cultivate. Yeah.
You are seeing a natural trend away from Facebook in some areas. I was just previous to doing this podcast recording with you guys, I was doing another podcast with a number of online pastors, and one of the pastors in the room was going into great detail on why he does not broadcast to Facebook. And the reason why, honestly, and what we talked about in the podcast, was I felt like his view of it was, yes, he can get far greater engagement on Church Online platform using that embed code, because the platform itself is meant to generate that next step. It's meant to keep people engaged from a longer. There's not as many of those distractions. But it's easy to lose that marketing piece of what you're talking about, Colin. You know, so often we feel like, you know, you got to count that butts in seats. You got to count that. And how do we, that 2 minute scroll through that person who sneezed when they're looking at the news feed, and maybe that counts as a view. Like, yeah. Does that count on the reporting? Does it not? What do we do with that? And instead of actually like figuring out what's best, let's just throw it in there and then online goes higher, or let's not count it at all. And then it's not, instead of looking at more of the discipleship model of what's happening and how the broadcast is helping you get people connected either into the physical or virtual model of discipleship.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. I mean, one of the things that I think it was about 20% of those that we surveyed indicated they didn't even have the capability to measure their online attendance, to really be able to know if it was impacting their physical attendance or the level of engagement. I think that's also that's a big question in terms of what does engagement look like. I mean, you've compared Facebook and online in terms of the amount of time they're there, but you know, I can be also be online and it appears that I'm online, but I'm in the next room, you know, fixing lunch or, you know, whatever. And so it was fascinating to me when I talked with the guys at Virtual Reality Church last week. We were just talking about metrics and some of those kinds of things. And that was one of the things that he said was he thinks there's going to be a real difference in the way that churches think about, particularly if they're comparing virtual reality experiences to an online experience. Mm-hmm. He said, because a virtual reality experience actually requires greater engagement, right? So, I mean, if you're in virtual reality, you're actually interfacing, engaging with the content. I mean, you got your goggles on, for goodness sake, you know? So it's, and so I think that's going to be a fascinating thing for us to try to figure out too, is what does engagement really look like? How do we measure that? Is it simply about, you know, the number of minutes that somebody's, you know, logged on, or are there ways that we can, began to get at actually transformational kind of metrics, particularly when you go back to start talking about the discipleship side of things.
Yeah, I think engagement and discipleship are the two things that we hear the most of churches that have been streaming for a while, of how do we unlock that? And the thing that probably the podcast talks about the most, you know, is how do we move to the next level, engage and disciple the people that are coming and not just have them be passive followers. But And there's so many cool things going on with that. You know, there's Church Online platform trying to make a bunch of updates in their platform to make that easier. And there's streaming providers like us that are trying to do cards and stuff that comes up. And then an interesting thought too is like the churches that are killing it on the, you know, marketing side of the church aren't at all killing it in probably the discipleship online. You know, it's like very different. Like you have like everybody wants to do what Elevation does because they have so many millions of views, right? And there's so many, and it's so cool. And what they do is they cut up little chunks and they post it all. And they do, like, if you look at their marketing team, it's amazing. Everybody wants to be that. But when you're a small church, it's really hard to mimic that. You know, they do things really excellently and have the numbers to where the algorithms work to their favor and do all that really well. So it might be good for a smaller church to say, hey, let Elevation be Elevation and God bless them in that way. Like my 15-year-old, you know, cousin and, you know, whatever, nephews just watch Stephen Furtick all the time and never go to church, you know, But then does it, if you're a small church, do you care more about discipleship online, you know, because that's your niche?
It's interesting, the whole influencer, the marketing stuff really is about influence at some level, particularly when you talk about Furtick and Elevate Church and those kinds of huge followings. But in some other realms that are impacted by online, for example, I do a lot of work in publishing as well. And one of the things they're discovering in publishing is you have a great, you have a much greater conversion rate, if you want to use that term, when you're actually working with not necessarily the biggest number, but with the right number. And so they began to talk, use this terminology of micro influencers. And so in many cases, you know, there are some of the major brands in terms of books and authors are having greater impact by taking a subset of their big fan base. But these are really people who are totally engaged and are really going to be able to, are really champions of the product. And so there's probably something for the church to learn there as well, as we think about the engagement and the attraction process as well. One of the other things that's happening in that space is we have a partnership with an organization called Glue. It's a big data subscription platform. And one of the things that they're being able to do, in addition to being able to more accurately understand who it is in your community, so that your communication, how whatever the marketing looks like, is really connecting with the people that are going to most likely say, yeah, that's what I need, I'm going to go to your church. The other thing that is really in the beginning stages, and that we're actually working with them on a couple of places, is developing some assessments. And I think that's going to be something that's going to get built into a lot of these platforms as well, that will help with measuring some of the transformation. So you've got some kind of pre and post test. So you have the ability, when somebody launches or begins to engage in a small group online, there's some kind of an assessment that they take. And then when they've completed a season or a 6-week series or whatever, there's kind of a post assessment. So I think that part of what's happening digitally is really growing as well.
That's good.
Yeah, I've been running some betas with Glue on that assessment and kind of the vehicle engine they're building around that. Arguably for me, and I've told them this is some of the most exciting things I see, honestly, in the church online today, because it's starting to now develop a system that I can build a discipleship process around online. Right. And it's not, oh, I got to utilize this platform and get it to integrate with this and this and this, and the data is all over the place. And something breaks and all these different people are pointing at each other. Glue's really starting to figure out how to do that and are putting something in place that any church relatively easily can build a discipleship process in place to get people connected online.
How many churches are actually thinking through that next step process in terms of, hey, so they're watching now, what's their next step depending on what platform they're watching on? Is there a unified next step? Is there a bunch of different databases kind of roaming around in different churches and they're struggling? How are they kind of managing a lot of the concepts?
That's a good question. It's early on, I think, in terms of, I would say most aren't managing it well. You know, we've, again, kind of our leadership network, primary client are really large churches, and even the really large churches, as we've worked within the data space, you know, they before they can even actually begin to effectively engage in some of this big data, this third party data, they're just trying to get their first and second party data right, you know, get their database to a place they even know who it is that's in their, you know, in their own church. And so but I think that there are, you know, there's a, we work with a group of churches, probably about 45 churches, that I would say are kind of on the front end, cutting edge. They're the ones who are building out the resources and the tools. They're figuring out how to use data, understand, you know, how to close your back door. You know, what are the indicators that somebody's about to leave? In terms of ministry, they're building out some propensity kind of profiles that help them to understand who are the people in your congregation that whose marriages are likely in trouble, what percentage of your people are that way or in that scenario. And as a result, what kind of discipleship and tools do we need to put in place? And so a lot of those conversations are beginning to happen, but I would say it's still pretty early in the stage. All the assessment process that we talked about, that I talked about previously with Glue, those are all built in such a way that when you complete the survey, based on your responses, there are customized next steps that are developed. So based on kind of where you are in the process. And so I think some of that next step process is going to be cooked into the assessment tools.
We touched on it earlier where Church Online is great for like a front door. These are visitors, people that don't even know who you are and are just trying to really start to learn more about your church. They're interested in the side door approach of how, okay, I'm traveling, I'm away, I'm a snowbird in Miami Beach who actually is from Canada, back and forth, and able to connect with the church that I'm attending from a distance. When we start to talk about maybe this digital door, maybe these people who are not physically in the space, but this is still part of their church, they are engaging in spiritual instruction and discipleship, but not in the physical realm. Like what needs to happen for the church to see this? When we have this conversation, often, at least I do, when I talk with pastors, they're like, hey, that person on the other side of town or in another country, in another time zone, that's not my responsibility. All the discipleship that I do is in the physical realm. What are some hurdles that we need to do to kind of get past that? What advice could you give for some of us in the church online realm that maybe see things differently? How can we help change this culture?
Well, I think anytime you're making anytime you're wanting to make a significant shift like that, it's really a culture shift. And anytime you shift a culture, the primary way that you do that is through storytelling and giving examples over and over and over again of how it actually is working. It's the same thing we talked about in multi-site all the time. You know, if you really want to become a multi-site church, you need to be talking about not the fact that you're opening another building, but you're talking about why you're doing it. Kind of goes back to the why as well. Chase Oaks Church, where Colin's dad's the pastor, I think when they were a master at it, and when they launched their multi-site strategy, their kind of framework was this value of you have to love where you live. Mm-hmm. And so they said, hey, we're going to really live into that value. We can't have people that are driving in 45 minutes to get to our campus on Legacy. We need to be able to allow people to worship, engage, in their community. And so I think some of that translates into online as well. So anyway, the big piece, I think, going back to your question, how do you help people get to that? It's telling the stories of transformation, telling the stories of where it works. An online campus pastor, a senior pastor, whoever the gatekeepers are and the influencers are in the context of a church, telling those stories of success is really, really important and key.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think thinking about it as a funnel is really, really helpful. So the reality is the purpose of streaming is there's a lot of benefits, but if you do stream, there's 40% of them is what in the report are irregular attendees, people that you don't know that, when Seacoast backed up the number, they said every time they run anything, 30 to 50% are people that they don't have any track of, don't know, aren't in any member database, never filled out a contact card, et cetera. And like the interesting thing about that is like, that's, 40, like for most churches are really concerned about growth. So in that funnel, you have some of those people that have never been to your church that are just watching online, right? Mm-hmm. You have some people that if you ask them in a grocery store, they would say, I'm a Chase Oaker or I'm a whatever, but they haven't been in 3 years, right? But they watch online every however long. And so I think the question is of like, hey, what's your strategy for getting those out of the funnel? It's probably okay to say some of those we want to attend in person, right? But for a lot of those, that's probably not okay to say for whatever reason, whether they're out of the city and attend in person, or whether they just personality wise would never come to a church until they receive more transformation, or maybe never, and then you have all those buckets of people. So I think as a church, just thinking through, hey, let's be honest about, 40%, whatever, here's the funnel. Do we have a plan for those different people in different walks of life, right? So like, are we thinking about and trying to shepherd the spiritual development of people that we won't ever see, because that's ours to steward. And so I think, yeah. I keep thinking about it of, hey, that's the reality of what's happening, no matter what you believe, so how can we steward them the best? Yeah.
Yeah. And the other cool thing, go ahead,
Ray. No, I was going to say, because, we used to think in terms of that, in terms of Christmas and Easter only, and now there's this whole other category of online, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting. Do you guys chat with any churches that actually have a strategy for that, or they're thinking through that process?
Good question. None that come to mind immediately. None that come to mind immediately. Calling anybody that you're engaged with.
Yeah, Jeff would know all their names. I sat in the session, we did a session basically that what ended up happening, I don't know if this was the session title, but we talked about the funnel of Church Online and how to move people from that and how people see that. And it's cool because what I think it's happening is like the churches that are between 500 and 4,000 people that are really doing the most in that because they're driven with growth, right? They're not the 10,000 people churches that really care about growth, but they're comfortable. You know, it's like the churches that are like, we need this to grow. Our senior pastor sees this as like a strategic difference of our church, how we're going to see this differently. So Jeff, I would like if you talk to that.
Yeah. So we did was at the church IT conference and we did a podcast. It's redefining the why of Church Online. And it's on the podcast. I'm not sure what number, but what we really, the challenge is, and it's really the biggest hurdle with Church Online is trying to figure out who that person is that's watching. Mm-hmm. And so like you can create code, but there's privacy issues. And so like we want privacy, but at the same time, we want to be able to access information and figure out how to do ministry with them. By the way, like that issue exists at the physical church too. I mean, how many of our people sit in the back of the room completely disconnected during the message and try to haul out of that lobby as fast as possible without somebody even saying hi to them? I mean, there's a large percentage of people, unless their kids are actually checked in to the children's ministry and they give, we have no idea who they are. They're not active in members, they're not serving. And so the challenge of Church Online, when people are like, yeah, but I don't know who they are. Well, you don't know who they are in the physical realm, yet you work hard to figure out how to engage them. You come up with ways, gimmicks, solutions to get them to join in a group, to meet the pastor, to put a face to a name and do that. A lot of that, there are some churches that are figuring it out. There are a lot more that are trying and experimenting different things. But at the end of the day, it's that same intentionality towards, I need to figure out who this IP address is, because that person, that IP address has a soul. And as a result of that, I need to spiritually care for that person.
Yeah. At the end of the day, people have to raise their hand, right, in the digital world to be able to say, yeah, I want to be contacted. And so I think some of the churches that are doing a good job of trying to figure out how to help people raise their hand are approaching it from a little bit different perspective. So again, I'm going back to Crossroads. I've been going back to dipping in that well a little bit, you know, but they have a series of podcasts that they do now that are specifically targeted at different demographics. So one is targeted at women who are in executive leadership. Wow. And it's primarily a podcast that's around things that would serve someone who's a woman and leading in a company in some form or fashion. So they're serving that person and then weaving in through that the opportunity for them to be able to talk about what they do at Crossroads and why that makes a difference. And then people have had that felt need made. Have that felt need met, and they're going to be more likely to raise their hand to figure out how to be connected with on another level. So I think that some of those kind of things are really key. I think the other thing though is there are a lot of people that show up online that we do have information on. Mm-hmm. And so it's figuring out how we create the system for a digital solution, much like the analog solution that I used back when I was in my very first church and a long time ago. And we had this, one of my responsibilities as associate was to follow up on the people that were irregular attenders. And so I had this process that I developed where I would, you know, regularly call these people. And it was in some ways, it was a little bit like a drip campaign. If you put it in today's, in today's vernacular, because it just every once in a while they'd get a note from me or they get a call from me or they get some kind of, I'd drop by their house back in the day when people actually visit your pastors visited your home and I'd leave my business card or whatever. But over time, probably some of the most significant ministry experiences I had as an associate in that church came from some of those people because I'd had this ongoing kind of contact with them. And whenever there was a crisis in their life, or somebody had somebody was going to want to get married or whatever. There was a big, they knew they had somebody to call. And so I think that that's the thing we have to think of. Another place we have to think about in terms of next steps and continuing to nurture people is how do we help people be exposed to the opportunities for next steps for those that we do know as well.
And I think this is where hiring a digital marketer for that role is really good, because they think through, you know, buckets of people online, right? And they think through, and it's all about, you know, getting people to interact is all about personalization and workflows. People can do that really well. I mean, right now there's, if you hire a good digital marketer, they'll know, like right now there's something that you can get that it probably won't last very long, but you can get the personal email address of like 80% of the people coming to your site. And you can match that and you can email them, even if they don't give you their info, which is like probably total privacy, you know, rule, but then like, that's what businesses are doing. Right. And so you've got to decide like, hey, what's okay for me to do versus whatever. And then break down that law, but at least have someone that knows, how to connect with someone digitally and in workflows, and have paths and thought through paths digitally, for each person that's coming. Cause taking that person and, that's just visiting your site, you don't want to do it on the fourth or fifth visit. You want to do it on the first visit. You want to have them engaged because you know that's the only time they might come, right? There's huge drop-off rates after that. And so you need someone to think through, okay, the first person this person's coming, are they in this, what's the best way to engage them? You know, are they in this boat? Are they someone that's elderly in a you know, nursery home? Are they someone that's watching that's not a believer, that's never attended church before, that's checking it out? You know, and then if so, you know, you interact with those people in different ways, and there's a lot of great smart ways that churches are doing to get those to engage move. Yeah.
So let's jump in our DeLoreans. Let's get in our time machines and go 10 years in the future. 2029. What trends? What is Church Online going to look at then? What is you know, we're seeing micro churches now. We're seeing some start with. With kids ministry and starting to explore in that space. What's Church Online going to look like in 2029? Anybody?
Everyone's quiet because everybody will be wrong if we videotape this.
I'm okay with it.
Well, I mean, yeah. I have a very limited sample size. Two conversations I've had. Actually, three. Two conversations and then one application. So I talked with the Pursuit Church, Angela Craig, Pursuit Church Live. And it's a totally online campus. Fascinating things that they're doing. They have an amazing international reach, 45 countries, 43 languages. 49% of the people that are logging in are coming in from developing countries. And so I think we're going to see some online campuses that are never moved from being online. They have a reach. They have an opportunity to connect in some unique ways. They're beginning to talk about, you know, development of their teams. They're putting together an academy to help train people, you know, how to lead in this kind of context. So I think we're going to see more and more of those. I was a little bit skeptical when I went and spoke with, or didn't go and spoke with, I had a conversation with Virtual Reality Church. I'm drawing a blank now on his name. Help me, Jeff.
DJ. DJ Soto.
Yeah, DJ. But I think it was fascinating for me to hear him talk about not so much the virtual reality side of things and the technology, but just the way they're thinking through that. So as he's even talking about the different platforms. So they're one of their primary virtual reality platforms. He kind of equated that to a mega church kind of model, because it was kind of the most well developed, and you have the ability to do all these special kind of things, event registration, all these different kinds of things. It's kind of this mega church kind of model. And then he said they also have a lot of people who are on this other platform whose name I don't remember right now, but he said that's kind of more like a house church, you know, kind of model. Because it's a little bit scaled back. It's a little bit kind of more organic. He's talking about the new platform that's kind of the new Facebook virtual reality platform that's coming. He said, we think that will be kind of a new model as well. And he even began to talk about it in terms of launching either new campuses or planting new communities by using these different kinds of technology. So I think the virtual reality thing has the potential to begin to gain some traction over the next 10 years. It was probably 10 years back now, maybe a little bit longer than that, when Life Church, Bobby Grunewald and those guys, you know, had a developed, was it called Second Life or something
like that? Second Life. Yeah, it was maybe more like 15.
And, you know, it was pretty, it was, of course, way advanced for its time, but it was still pretty clunky. And I think the advances that have been made in the last 10 years will only accelerate over the next 10.
I want to ask a question, and forgive me if I'm getting personal, because I want to try to figure this out, because I'm all about the digital church, and maybe culture isn't ready for us to accept the idea of a digital only church, but I think that from a theological standpoint, it's there. It's just going to take time for acceptance. Greg, you asked a question, and when you said that you went in a little hesitant, where did that hesitation come from, and at what point did that kind of appease for you? Help me. You're a little older. You have a good perspective. I'm not dating you. I'm sorry. But
oh, you're very kind. A little older. Yeah, I'll take that.
A little older. Gracious here. But tell me about that. Help me unpack here. So, like, what was the concerns, and did, how did it dissipate, or did it? Like, where do you stand today?
Yeah, so I think that it was interesting, because one of the things that I, when I interviewed him, I asked him what was surprising to him, or what was surprising to others whenever they had conversations with him. And he said, well, most people think that when they hear about virtual reality church, that it's just a bunch of, you know, punks that are gamers, you know, that's all they're living in this virtual reality. And he said, actually, the demographics of those that are participating in our online church, the average age is like 42. Mm-hmm. And their leaders that are actually leading and they're trained to lead are in that kind of 40s age range as well. And so I think I just probably in general, I had this perception about virtual reality as being this gamer kind of thing, not really, not really real. I think that, you know, for me, it's probably still going to be, it's still going to be a process of transformation. I don't know that I'll ever get to the place where I'm going to feel comfortable just going to a virtual reality church, or only going to an online church for that matter. Because I do think there are some, when the opportunity affords itself, there are some things that can happen in a face-to-face kind of conversation that don't happen online. So that's probably, you know, I may be showing my age, but I think there's some of those kind of realities. The other thing that was kind of fascinating to me when I talked with Angela at Pursuit Church Live, which makes total sense to me, because they don't do any kind of visual kind of thing in their thing. It's you're logging on, but you're totally anonymous. I think you may have an avatar or whatever that you develop, but you're totally anonymous. And so she's up in the Pacific Northwest, and she had a gathering where she invited people to actually come physically to come together for a physical gathering. And she said what was so fascinating was the diversity of the people that showed up. Mm. And people had no idea. Age diversity, theological diversity, ethnicity diversity, socioeconomic diversity, a lot of people with handicaps, you know, that they physically couldn't participate in a church on a regular basis. And so this had kind of opened up the world of church and a relationship with Christ and an opportunity to be in community in some really significant ways. And so I don't anticipate that it will ever become the only mode for doing church, either of those, but I do think it has the potential to increase as being an amazingly effective way to reach people and allow people to be in a process of transformation and discipleship.
Well, gentlemen, I really appreciate the time. Colin, Greg, and any closing thoughts as we land the plane?
Yeah, I think, you know, church is historically very long behind culture change. And, you know, when you look at the 20 and 30 and 40 year olds, just the way their behavior changing is that they go home and watch Netflix, right? And many less people are getting out. And so if we think about how church drives change for that, it gets interesting, you know, like who knows what it'll look like in 10 years, but it does get interesting, you know, when you look at the behavior shifts happening now. And if we want to meet people, if we want to reach people, we got to meet them where they're at, you know. They're not going to come to a building if that's the only place they go to every week, you know, that has social interaction. I mean, that's just unrealistic to think, you know, that's so scary. So I'm really excited that churches are rethinking kind of, hey, what does culture look and what does it look like to be Jesus to the culture? And it's really cool to get to see that happen all over the world and small examples like virtual reality church and bigger examples. And it's evident that God's at move in the digital world, and it's really fun to get to watch it. So if you're doing it, please continue.
Yeah. I think it's an opportunity for us to, it's a tool that God has provided for us to be able to engage different groups of people in ways that we haven't been able to do, just as the other, major technology transformations all the way back to the printing press, have done. So I think it gives us the opportunity to do that. I think it's interesting too, to think about the fact that there could be a natural tendency for us, for many churches to say, okay, I've got to have an online campus or online, service or online experience. I'm going to do that. And in some ways they end up not thinking through it deeply enough to understand what uniquely has to happen in that online experience, and maybe even how that online experience shows up online. It may not be as an online church. It may be in some other digital kind of expression where people are living that, as you said, Colin, people go home and watch Netflix. There's probably not a whole lot of those that are unchurched that go home and look for an online church service somewhere. So I think that hard work of really understanding how you make an online experience one that will actually intersect with where people are living, I think is a really important thing for churches to think about as well.
Yeah, you got to have a strategy behind it. And so with that strategy comes intentionality to figure out who you are as a church and what that representation looks like online. My challenge is that if you're broadcasting services, you should be considering a discipleship process, because you're missionally engaging people anywhere around the world. And if somebody gets saved, there has to be some sort of an intentional discipleship process, small groups, next step, something for them to get further in. But no, those are very good words, Greg. Thank you for that. Hey, Ray, as we're wrapping, anything on your end?
Yeah, just to piggyback on what you're saying, Jeff, so many churches don't really think through the discipleship process on the onset anyways. It's an important factor. They think about having small groups. They think about having messages, and not even just in an online environment, but even in their in-person environments. And so that next step, especially as we enter a new decade where engagement is really the driving force, and we've talked about that often, how churches need to understand better, and we all need to work harder at helping people through those next steps, whether it's in person or even through digital platforms, and thinking about how they are the same next step no matter which environment they're engaging in. And so my hope and my challenge, and listen, guys, great study, very encouraging stuff, good things to hear. Our hope is that more leaders, more church leaders, take a look at their next steps and think through how that can happen on all platforms, in person included.
Yeah, and we don't want to downplay the streaming and what's involved in that. It's definitely a part of it. By the way, if you're not, I'm going to do cheap commercial for Colin because I'm not going to give him time to. If you're not involving Living as One in your streaming process, you certainly should. I can't tell you how many hours of sleep I've lost on bad streaming solutions. Living as One solved many problems for many, many churches that I work with and others, and you should too. Colin, does that work commercial-wise? You good? Thumbs up?
Yeah,
good. Awesome. So livingasone.com, and of course, Leadership Network, leadnet.org, I think.
.org, right. Leadnet.org.
Phenomenal organization that's helping push forward the cause of Big C Church. Very, very impressed. I've loved the stuff that I've done with them in the past, and even seeing the stuff that's coming out now is phenomenal. So Greg, Colin, thank you very much for being here and being a part of this. Ray, once again, thanks for jumping on. This is Jeff with The Church Digital. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time at The Church Digital Podcast. Y'all have a good day.